I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to do a special show, an in-depth conversation with the person whose job it is to make Indianapolis safe, Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. He has the challenge of overseeing the security in the coming weeks of one of the largest events in sports, the Indianapolis 500, and in the next few days for the largest half marathon in the country, as well as the day-to-day safety of the city's citizens. And he has to do this while helping to restore public trust in a police department that has been shaken by scandal. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We look forward to talking with you. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the program by and join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, you've come into a situation here where there were a lot of challenges, things that needed immediate attention. Let's start first with, what were some of the challenges that you confronted when you came into the job? Let's set the table here, and then we can set the conversation from there.
Well, you know, when we got here and started really reviewing everything and seeing that there was, in some areas of town, a mistrust of police services, there was very great deal of concern among police officers regarding that. They shared that openly, which was a good sign, that they were being open to that they were understanding that. But what I did find that wasn't a challenge is we have highly motivated people and one of the most educated workforces I've seen in public safety as I've been around the nation. What our challenges were is making sure that we're organized, we're all moving in the right direction, that we're establishing goals and objectives, we have business plans, that we're moving forward, and we know what our roadmap looks like. I often say that a dollar saved is a dollar earned in the private sector. Mm-hmm. For the public sector, believe it or not, sometimes we're not as good on the fiduciary end. And what we're trying to do within the Department of Public Safety is make sure that we save dollars, we're more efficient, we're more effective. And for the dollars that we save, we can put that back in the public safety and enhance that. And the only way we can do that is to really sit down, have some open dialogue and discussions about how business has been conducted in the past. We have a good foundation which to build upon, but we need to have solid business practices tied to goals and objectives as we move forward.
Where have been some of the areas that you think you've been able to find the greatest savings?
Right now, I think most of the greatest savings early on came from my office alone. We cut a few a few hundred thousand dollars out of the office that I'm in. Before I started cutting other budgets, I wanted to make sure people saw that I was willing to do that. For the new year, we've got a few million dollars that we're cutting out of some of the areas around, with the exception of police and fire right now. That's been difficult. If you look nationally, we've been through the greatest economic downturn since the Great Depression. I've been involved in government for a long time. You could see this coming with a lot of the bubble when it burst, and knowing that this was going to occur and making sure that where I was before, we were ready for it. Here in Indianapolis, the good news is that most of our departments are not heavily relying on grants. So that has sheltered us from some of the issues with sequestration and the drops in grant funding. But also, when you look at the local tax structure, that's changed somewhat, and that's where most of our problems are coming from. That's why it's important for us to set goals and objectives, tie our budgets to that, and make sure we're as efficient as possible.
We are talking with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. Here on No Limits, you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I probably ought to talk about the elephant in the room here, the fact that David Bissard obviously has run into some legal trouble. Again, I am presuming that you can't comment on the specifics of that case because there's an investigation.
Right. I cannot, but I can tell you a couple things as being outside of Indianapolis and watching this unfold and reading about it and seeing that anytime you have a police officer that is accused of doing what he's accused of doing, that is traumatic for the department and traumatic for the city. Arriving here, I knew that's something we're going to have to deal with. We have let the process move forward on the prosecution end and worked with the prosecutor's office as the police department has done in the past. But there were some things that were troubling to me, quite frankly. The way evidence was handled, we need to make sure that we have a property room that's that has a bunch of safeguards. We're in the process of working through that.
What things did you find troubling?
Well, one thing is just talking about the property room in general, is that we have property in numerous sites throughout the city. Mm-hmm. I would like to see us centralize down the road. There were some sites that didn't, the one in question regarding refrigeration. I got here. They had been studying that, talking about that. It was time to buy new refrigeration units. We've purchased those. I'm not sure where they are in the installation phase, but that's something we did early on. We knew it was a weakness. There's no reason to wait around. We need to make those changes early on. The other thing that I discovered as I was looking at that is I'm a firm believer in discipline. I grew up in law enforcement, retired as an assistant chief, became a chief of police in South Texas, had a police department that had tremendous issues, much more issues than the Indianapolis Metro Police Department would ever dream of having. We worked through those processes, but when I got here, one of the things that troubled me is when I was talking to citizens, they were concerned about the potential lack of discipline. When I talked to officers, they were concerned about the timeliness of discipline. And when I looked at the process from a complaint coming in to when the chief of police makes a decision at the end, it was a system that was functioning, but not functioning as well as I would want it to do. I want it to be.
How did you change it?
Well, we haven't changed it yet. It's an enormous function. It comes in through our citizen complaint form. So we have sat down with Six Sigma. We have an individual that's process mapping the entire system, looking for the bottlenecks. They have found quite a few. We are in the process of streamlining that. We put together, and we can talk about efficiency teams in a little bit. Mm-hmm. We put this efficiency team together to look at this portion. They are going through the process right now. That should be on my desk by June the 1st. When we're finished with that, we're going to look at how we investigate crimes or allegations against police officers to make sure that that's clear. But our goal at the end of the day is to make sure citizens understand the complaint process, that they're fully kept up to date in the complaint process. And for that officer who's complained against, we need to make sure that if discipline is going to be meted out, it needs to be done in a timely fashion. Or if they have not done anything wrong and it's simply someone trying to get back at them because they wrote them a citation or arrested someone in their family, we need to exonerate them. It's good for morale when you do that. Our officers have never asked me to do anything to keep a bad officer from getting in trouble. They've asked me to fix the system to make sure that it flows better. And that's what we're committed to doing. That efficiency team should be finalized. And as we move past that, we will share all that information with the public. That efficiency team with the others are listed on the website. People can read it for themselves. But after we're finished with that, then we're going to look at how we actually investigate crimes that are allegedly committed by police officers and make sure that we have best practices. What we have now is functional, but it's not a best practice in my opinion, and we need to do more.
Is there any future for David Bissard on your police force right now?
I think that some people may say that that's premature, but what I've seen, no.
No future?
No future.
He's gone.
as far as I'm concerned, yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. You've given us some news. I also would like to talk a little bit. You mentioned at the top of the show that when you came in here, you found an atmosphere of mistrust in parts of the city. How much of that has been attributable to the Bissard, the ongoing saga here, and how do you go about getting past that?
That is difficult. Some of it is. The methods of policing, while some of it has been very successful, sometimes the public didn't understand what the police department was doing. There's not that strong community policing initiative that you would like to have. That is not, and I want to repeat, that is not our officers' fault. That's because we don't have enough officers in patrol. We don't have enough officers in general. That's why we have another team looking at moving at probably 85 to 100 police officers back on the streets of Indianapolis to help that. A lot of that, and what I've told the police department, I've told the public, is that the police department's not asking for you just to say, forget the past, forget all these issues that you think you've had, let us earn your respect back. and work with us. Work with us to move forward. We have tremendous law enforcement talent in this city. I am impressed every time I go to a roll call and I listen to the questions they have and the solutions. Very seldom do they just complain. They always have a solution to a problem, and that's what I like to hear. And that's why I say we have a very good police department. I need to do my part to make sure they have enough officers in patrol, and we need to start celebrating the success of the police department. Something that hasn't been done well in the past is that we don't celebrate the success of the police department very often. If you look at the two weeks after I arrived, there was an explosion in Richmond Hills. Not only did the fire department respond exceptionally well, the police department did work with the prosecutor's office, and three people are in jail. That is incredible, unheard of, for arrests and investigations to be that thorough and an arrest to happen that quickly.
We are talking with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've talked obviously about the Bussard situation and how you're looking at new disciplinary processes and the ways that that citizens can express concerns about police misconduct or potential police misconduct. What are some of the other priorities for getting the police department? And, you know, we can broaden it out. Your responsibility is much greater than just the police department's. What other areas of improvement do you see?
Well, if you look at what we've done since I've been here, and I've been here 6 months now, is originally I thought that there was a lot of issues going on when I arrived here. I thought the first thing I need to do is take over leadership, meet with as many people as I could, and let the dust settle, so to speak. Let people realize that things are going well. We have a good foundation we want to build on, but I wanted to make sure we were challenging people. But before I made any big moves, I wanted to make sure that I was meeting with citizens, I was meeting with our workforce. A week doesn't go by where I haven't spent numerous times and numerous hours meeting with different people. And what I was finding out, the citizens, the information they were sharing and what our workforce was sharing was similar. And a lot of these issues, I thought, well, if we're going to tackle all of these issues quickly, it's going to be difficult, but the only way I know to do that is put together what I call efficiency teams.
We are talking with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. In terms of these conversations that you've been having with citizens, and that's, you know, generally when people come in from a different community, at least smart people, and you seem like a smart guy to me, come in, they do a kind of listening tour to figure out exactly what the problem is before they commit themselves. Was there anything that surprised you out of it that just caught you completely off guard?
Not really. I mean, I had done my homework. The mayor's office had been very open about a lot of the issues. The one thing that has surprised me, the one that really stands out, and we're going to work very hard to rectify this, is something that the mayor brought up, is that we need to strengthen our training of first-line supervisors. It doesn't matter if you work in communications, in animal care control, or you work in the police department, fire department. It doesn't really matter if you're a first-line supervisor. We need to train our first-line supervisors. 95% at minimum of all of our employees, of 3,500 employees within the Department of Public Safety, works for a first-line supervisor. We need to make sure those supervisors are adequately trained. They know how to handle everything from sexual harassment complaints, discriminatory complaints, to just making sure they do the payroll on time. How do they manage, and how do they lead? That's something that we have to strengthen. We need to have a robust system of evaluations and introduce some very good business principles.
How do you go about doing that? I mean, is that extra sets of instruction, you know, new on-site training? I mean, do you send people away to get management?
Well, a little bit of all that. One of the things that we're doing is really sitting down and looking at litigation. And what litigation have we had in the past? Is any of it because of a lack of training or a lack of knowledge, and addressing that through training? This is tough budget times that we've already addressed. We are in the process of beginning a Department of Public Safety Foundation, which should be up and running sometime in June.
So that people can make contributions.
They can make contributions, and the local universities can make in-kind contributions through a foundation and help us with some training and make sure that we're getting the adequate training we need. I know it's something that's a priority to the mayor, it's a priority to me. And if we're going to be successful down the road, not just next year and the year after, but 5 and 10 years down the road, we need to strengthen those type of training.
We are talking with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or connect via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Again, I'm talking with Troy Riggs. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking with Indianapolis Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. Al, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to specifically ask about juvenile gangs. And I know across the country there's been different focuses within law enforcement, with whether it's problem-focused policing or community outreach policing and now intelligence-led policing. I was wondering if in Indianapolis we have instituted the tracking of juvenile gang graffiti to be able to further identify movements of gangs as they're moving further northward. It seems clear that they're moving northward into the suburban areas with greater activities and clearly, graffiti is always the first sign, and typically in other law enforcement communities, when they track graffiti and then low-level crimes, are able to then anticipate the movement of juvenile gangs as they move across different adjoining municipalities. So I was wondering if that kind of focus has been implemented yet.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Al.
It has not been implemented, but I will tell you that I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, born and raised there and retired there, and then moved to South Texas. The reason that's important is when I arrived in South Texas, gang issues were tremendously important to the city and also graffiti issues. I learned a great deal over the last 3 years. And I'll have to say, as I arrived in Indianapolis to compete for this position, I was shocked by the amount of graffiti. It's not a lot of graffiti, but I never saw graffiti coming to Indianapolis as I used to visit prior to going to South Texas. And I was only in South Texas for 3 years. Because of that, we put together a team that Councilor Miller is chairing. He's very passionate about graffiti, on how we can get control of graffiti. Looking at the graffiti, taking pictures of the graffiti, tracking down the people responsible for that, arresting them, and if they're young, holding their parents or their parent accountable for that as well. And also a program on how to remove the graffiti once it's there. That team is up and running. We should have their final report sometime in June. We want to implement that. Now, in addition to that, we have to also look at the violence that we have in our community as well. And youth gang activity is part of that. And Chief Hyde has put together a team to look at all violent crime and to get us an operational plan for this summer. Part of that will deal with youth violence and youth gangs. Now, that group is looking at everything from reentry issues to truancy issues and everything in between. So all these teams are working together. But let me just also make this clarification. All graffiti that we have in Indianapolis is not just from gang activity. What I have seen in my experience in most cities is that some of it is, but usually half or a majority of it is just a couple of kids that decide they're going to do what they consider art on the side of somebody's company, and they do it on their own. The last arrest we made when I left South Texas on graffiti was a 38-year-old man.
Is there a legal distinction between that sort of street art and graffiti?
Well, you know, you have a lot of rules and regulations as far as what you can put on your building. You have to get permits and stuff. But obviously, if you're taking a spray paint or a spray paint can and you're going and you're doing something on someone else's property, then that's illegal. And we need to stop that from occurring. A lot of these young juveniles mark their turf that way, and that's what people are familiar with. But what we're seeing nationally is a growth in graffiti outside of juvenile gang activities. So we have to realize that we need to adapt, and we need to get our handle on graffiti here before we look like some of the cities around the nation that has so much graffiti they can't keep up.
It seems like a natural segue to talk about what is the biggest threat to public safety here in Indianapolis right now. What is problem number one you need to solve?
problem number one is something that we can solve as a society, and that's a lack of education. If you look at the individuals that have the propensity to commit a violent crime or have committed a violent crime, they almost always have certain things in common. They come from a single-family household, they lack education, and they lack employment. I am so excited to see what some of the individuals here in the city are doing with reentry, helping people who have never had a job before coming out of prison, letting them get their lives straight. We are very fortunate and blessed here in the city to have so many fine individuals to do that. But we really need to focus on, and I know this sounds odd coming from a person who used to be a police officer. A lot of people think I would say arrest. Arrest, when we arrest someone, there's no magic trap door where they don't enter society again. They do. For us to reduce crime long term, we need to be focused on education and job opportunities.
We are talking with Public Safety Director Troy Riggs here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Claudette, welcome to the program.
Hello. I live in the Linwood Square area, and we have a marked car whose officer takes naps on a regular basis behind the post office. And I wonder what kind of supervision looks at the time this officer spends patrolling.
Well, we will look into that, but I can tell you that that's one of the things that I want to do, and that's one of the weaknesses that we had when we arrived is on the administrative end, tracking the activity of all of our employees, tracking the work product and the quality of work product. So we are focused on that. That's also part of the management training, making sure you know what your people are doing and when they are doing it. There is no excuse for anyone, none of our employees, to be sleeping on duty. If we find that, they would be dealt with appropriately. And if someone has information like that, they can certainly share that information. I can tell you that something else that we're doing to make sure that, and this was a weakness that we had, is if you called in to talk to someone and you complained on, say, a police officer, somebody may take your complaint and send it through, and then that officer is working in detail on the Indy 500, gets complained on again, someone may take that complaint and send it through. We're in the process of buying software now that no matter where they are and who reports it, a complaint, that it goes into a system, and the system will red flag it's that individual's commanding officer that there have been two complaints within a short period of time, and then the commanding officer can intervene to see, number one, do we have an officer that is misbehaving? Do they have an issue and be dealt with? But it's another accountability factor. But I can't, and Chief Height cannot, deal with an individual if we don't have a citizen to tells us that someone's doing something wrong or illegal. And I will say this. We have 1,600 police officers. We have 1,200 firefighters. We have 3,500 employees in the Department of Public Safety. That type of action is not indicative of any of them. I have seen them work very hard, and they're working very long hours and very difficult hours. But we will hold those accountable that mess up and do something like that.
I want to add, actually, I think the second part of Claudette's question could be useful public information here. If they see something like that, how should people go about reporting it? How should they, you know, so that it enters the system in the right way? What's the step-by-step way to do that the right way?
You know, we
way?
Have a citizen complaint area that they can go to in City Hall that'll do that, or at City County Building on the 20th floor. However, we talked about that process that we're going to have. I would say this, if you have something you want to share with me and make sure that I know or Chief Height knows, we have established an email that people send in information all the time. They ask questions about efficiency teams. They send us information they think will be helpful. They also send us complaints. And that is dps@indy.gov.
Give that again, yeah.
dps@indy.gov. DPS stands for Department of Public Safety. dps@indy.gov. And I, every call that comes in there gets logged, and you will get a response.
And are these confidential? Do they just go to your eyes, or
they come? It's one of my assistants. But if it's a complaint, they will be told a complaint process, and someone from the complaint desk will call them and walk them through the process.
Neil, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me, John.
Certainly.
Congratulations on your recent accolades.
Oh well, thank you. But let's fire off the question to Mr. Riggs. Thank you very much, though.
Sure. I wanted to ask Mr. Riggs if he's seen the recent study that was recently posted online by a news source here in Indianapolis that cited Indianapolis as having two of the most crime-ridden areas in the country. I happen to live in the Meridian Park sort of neighborhood, just north of downtown Indianapolis, and it's a nice neighborhood. But that is one of the highest crime areas in the country, according to this study. And I just wanted to see if he would mind commenting on that study.
Well, unfortunately, and I am familiar with that study, and there are studies that come out almost weekly on that. And what has happened is someone has put together this analytical review, and they've decided that we have two of the highest crime areas, and they are high crime areas for Indianapolis.
Which two areas are they?
Well, it's usually, a lot of times it's 40218, mostly around that area is where you're looking in, where he was just mentioning Meridian. But I can tell you that I've been to numerous cities, and you cannot tell me, and I've been through those areas numerous times, that in Detroit alone they had four. You can't tell me that they don't have a majority of their city is much more unsafe than any part of Indianapolis. I've been in other cities as well. Let me tell you how they do those numbers. It's not, now I do not want to diminish the issues that we're having in these areas. That's why we have a team together looking for a plan for 2013 and an operational plan for 2014, which will focus on these areas. But let me tell you, the analytics are flawed on this, and it's because every department gathers data in a different manner. The FBI takes information from all these departments around the nation, and then they post it on the web, and people do their own analytics. The problem is every department has different ways of tracking information with budget cuts. There are departments that aren't doing a very good job of tracking data, and here in Indianapolis, we were 7 years behind. We've been able to get that data up to date now. That data will be even more robust in the future. And sometimes in these analytical studies, a city that does a good job, and we've been doing a good job the last 6 months of getting that data under control, cities that do a good job compiling data, submitting data, get penalized in these analytics because they're trying to do it the right way when other cities don't.
We are talking about public safety in Indianapolis with Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Christine, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm actually an art teacher, and I taught at a high school in the Indianapolis public system. When I moved into my new home about 10 years ago on Fall Creek Parkway, I was burglarized almost instantly. And when I moved in, when I called the police, they said that I shouldn't have moved there. And, you know, rather than trying to deal with the issue at hand, they were just like, what were you doing moving here? And, it was a beautiful old home, and I felt like it was a good investment, and I am a very active member in the community. And I guess when I was listening to a report a long time ago, so I don't remember the details, I know that there was a mayor in New York who had proposed biting the little crimes so that the little crime makers wouldn't grow up into big crime makers. And I felt like my burglary was a good example of that, because the police had his jacket, which had in it a knife, which had on it a partial fingerprint. They had all of my videos that he had tried to steal, because I caught him at the window and chased him down the street. But, they had everything. They could have done fingerprinting. They could have done all kinds of things. And it ended up that I'm pretty sure I had this kid in my class, because I literally like got to look at him face to face, and I ended up having this kid in my class, and the police in the school told me there was nothing I could do about it because I had no evidence, and the police had all the evidence. But I guess it's not about my burglary. It's more about, we would develop a better trust with the police if they would deal with the smaller issues that we have.
Thank you very much for the call, Christine. Well, it seems like there are a couple of questions we could ask there based on Christine's story. At one point, is there a distinction between small crimes and big crimes?
There is, but we need to be focused on all. And that's one of the reasons that Chief Height and his team are putting together a way that we can really analyze crime. We want people to report crime, but I will tell you this. Being in law enforcement, as a police officer, sworn police officer for 23 years, I am always appalled if anybody wearing a uniform tells someone you shouldn't have moved somewhere because of crime. Mm-hmm. That's their responsibility as an officer. I know this was 10 years ago, but that's still appalling to me, and I know it's appalling to most police officers that wear a badge around this country, especially here in Indianapolis. My goal and Chief Height's goal and our goal of our officers is to reduce crime, reduce the fear of crime. And if your home's been burglarized, to me, that's not a small crime. That's a large crime. Mm-hmm. The good news is, and I have to give a lot of accolades to Chief Height and his team, crime is down significantly. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone talks about the homicide rate, and they should. It's up this year. Mm-hmm. We had aggravated assaults that went up last year. When I arrived, I was concerned about homicides going up this year. That's kind of a precursor, and they have. That's why we're doing the team for 2013 summer and for all of 2014 and looking at all these issues. But overall, violent crime is down, depending on what time frame you look at, probably 2-3%, and property crime is down about 10% this year. So there are some real good signs as far as fighting crime, and that's done because people with wearing a uniform care about these type of burglaries. But going back to the caller before, we have areas of town that are troubled, and we have to focus on them. We have to be honest about that. We need to focus on that, and that's why help is on the way in the form of 85 to 100 additional patrol officers and an operational plan for the summer and all of 2014 that it's been lacking in the past.
What else do you track? I mean, you know, she talked about small crimes, fighting the small ones so that you can attempt to cut off the big crimes. You just mentioned a couple of seconds ago that aggravated assault can be a precursor to a rise in the homicide rate.
Yes.
What are some of the indicators that you got a problem coming down the pike, and what can you do to intervene?
One of the big indicators isn't even in crime rates. It's how many people are being released from prison. With sequestration and with cuts in funding for mental health issues and in people being held in jails and people coming back in our community, every year we have 5,000 people that are released from prison that come to Marion County to live. Only about 3,500 of those, when they went away to prison, I actually lived in Marion County. We have 1,500 or more coming in to get the services that are here. We do not track them. We need to begin tracking them, and that's something that we've been focused on since I arrived. How do we take all the information and data that's out there in government services throughout the city, throughout the state, and put that in one area so we can look at it in real time and we can develop ways of handling that? Chief Height's working on that end, but I'm not just talking about crime issues. I also want to look at code enforcement issues. There's violations there. Sometimes those code enforcement violations at a home that's causing an issue in a neighborhood, if we're aggressive about that, we find out there's drug activity, gang activity, domestic violence type activity. We need to be working with Rick Powers and code enforcement. Rick has done a great deal of work with our Sergeant Hippo and the group within the police department. We need to expand their work throughout this community.
When you talk about code enforcement violations, what sorts of things are we talking about there?
Yeah, dilapidated house, unsafe living conditions. It just looks a mess from the street, high weeds, all of the thing that when you see an eyesore, and it's been my experience that those type of homes can breed crime. It's kind of the broken windows theory that she was alluding to, what they did in New York. That was part of that process. Mayor Ballard, when he interviewed me, understood my background of bringing governmental agencies together to work on common causes. Mm-hmm. And he said, we've got a good foundation here. We've really fixed some things that we've inherited. I need you to take us to the next level. We're ready. And so that's what we're doing. Within a year, especially within 2 years, we're going to be able to take the mayor in a room, sit down, and he's going to be able to see all operations of all government agencies on one map.
We are talking about public safety with Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about public safety in Indianapolis with Public Safety Director Troy Riggs. If you want to connect with us via Facebook or Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. We've gotten a question, looks like a tweet, from a listener named Dan. What has Mr. Riggs done to prepare for the Indy 500 festivities and upcoming mini marathon? There's a little bit of a news hook, obviously, with what happened in Boston there. What changes have we made?
That is very. First, let me just brag about the Department of Homeland Security, Police, Fire, all those departments, and our state and federal partners that help put on these events every year. I was in charge of Kentucky Derby, Ryder Cup, and a lot of the festivities, and we would reach out to Indy to learn best practices. So rest assured that we have a long history of doing safe events. I will tell you this, we have tried to learn everything we can, and information has been fairly sketchy on the law enforcement end coming out of Boston. We're a little concerned about that, but we have pieced together enough information, learned enough information about what occurred there, that we have made a few changes. Most of the changes people will not see. They're behind the scenes in our operational plan. I'm obviously not going to get too much in the operational plan. We also have made sure that, and I ordered this right after the Boston, I wanted to go back through the plans, make sure that we could account for everything from vehicles to security-type apparatuses that exist in the city that we don't have control on. We've already reached out to some private companies and said in the event that we needed to strengthen even more, could we utilize your security apparatuses? They've said yes. So we have looked at those. And then the thing that you will see publicly is you'll see additional canines that will be walking around. These for most likely are going to be bomb-type sniffing dogs, explosive-type sniffing dogs. We're going to put those in those areas. Now, I will tell you that...
Are you going to monitor backpacks more closely?
Well, that is something that the venues are doing.
Yeah.
We have Fourth Amendment issues when we want to do that in law enforcement or public safety. So there's going to be a lot of activity. But let's remember that the reason that those two individuals were located quickly was because citizens got involved with law enforcement. So we're asking people if the state has the See Something, Say Something campaign. Obviously that we are going to be sending out tweets during these events to get people updated. That's going to be different as well. But as far as if you're looking for any major difference or major influx of personnel, that's not going to happen simply because we use everybody, anyone. Everybody's all hands on deck during the Indianapolis 500, but there have been some changes to the operational plan.
We are talking with Public Safety Director Troy Riggs here on No Limits. Deborah, welcome to the phone, to the program. Sorry, got my tongue tied there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a question, and I'm on the cell phone, so I apologize if there's any road noise. I really appreciate what our new public safety director is saying, and I do leadership and management consulting for public safety and not-for-profits, and frankly, most of the work I do is not in the state of Indiana, sadly. On the other hand, what's really at issue for most police and fire departments is changing or transforming the organizational culture to support the kinds of initiatives that sound like you're willing to make. That's difficult in a political environment where politics dictate who department heads are, because culture change takes 5 to 10 years, as most folks know. So from a sustainability standpoint, how are you going to work towards changing the culture to support the kinds of needed public safety changes that you're working on?
Thank you very much for the question, Deborah.
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's the difficult part of these jobs. But I can tell you that the benefit that I have here is when you look throughout the Department of Public Safety, as I said earlier, we have some motivated individuals, and we have some great ideas coming. And I know that a lot of people are focused on the police department, but let me say this about the police department. I have not found a police department that is unwilling, the workforce, unwilling to change. The FOP has shown very good leadership. That's the Fraternal Order of Police, the union that represents. They have shown very good leadership. They have been very honest. They have never lied to me. They have never publicly criticized anything we have done. They have brought up concerns privately. We've been able to work through those. And I think that you will see as we continue to stress leadership training, we just graduated another class of leadership training in the IMPD. As you see the significant changes we're about to make, as you see more officers on the street interacting, that cultural shift of being reactive to proactive and serving the community is going to happen. I have no doubt to think it's going to to work. However, safeguarding for that, to make sure, is there her point, how do you make sure that stays? We do that by having administrative reviews and reviewing operational, administrative, and fiduciary responsibilities, and then also making sure that we have a clearly defined disciplinary process and people are held accountable for wrong actions.
At what point will people start seeing the impact of the changes you're making? I mean, will they look and say, wow, that's a different police department?
I think they will start. Hopefully they've seen some changes already, but I think that they will see significant changes beginning in June with a lot of the major operational changes. There's been some shifts since I've been here in the way we handle things. But the first major change that citizens witnessed that they probably didn't realize they witnessed was how we handled the aftermath of the Richmond Hills explosion. Mm-hmm. The operation part of it was great, but aftermath, we wanted to make sure, when I say we, Mayor Ballard and I, that we not only tried to hold a person or persons responsible for the crime, but we used all of our tools within Department of Public Safety to help people rebuild their lives. That worked well. It's the first time it's been done here to that level, and it's something that people around the nation are calling and saying, we want to do that for our citizens.
Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
My follow-up was, my question was a follow-up to Christine's comment about it's not really a zip code. It's not 46218 zip code. It's a mantra within IMPD. My front door was kicked in. I knew who took it. I knew who took the TV. This was 5 years ago. You know, and I understand you just got here, Mr. Riggs, but it's a mantra. It's a leadership issue. So I'd like you to speak to that point it's something that I was told. It's like, look, we don't have the time to fingerprint. You know, it's not an important thing. Theft is not an important thing, and it is. If they get away with theft, what else can they get away with?
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you for the call. And theft is important. I have not, I'm truthful, I have not seen that internally officers saying things, but obviously they're not going to tell the director of public safety that if that's their feeling. I have heard that from the community. I have addressed that with some of our command staffs and talking about that cannot be tolerated. If there is evidence there, we need to collect it. However, I will tell you this. Fingerprints at times don't do much good. And if the officer feels like that they can't get adequate fingerprints for what we call the AVIS system, they will not do that. They should take time to explain that at times before they move on. And then there's sometimes they may be so busy that they feel like they have runs stacked and they have officers needing backup, and they're going to move on to a crime against a person instead of a property crime. That's not the best way to handle things. That's why we're focused on putting more officers on the street so that that does not happen in the future. I will say this, though. A lot of people have said, well, you know, the unions protect people when they do it. Not at all. I have not heard anyone from the local FOP that has ever said, we want our officers saying something like that. They want the same thing we want, and they have been instrumental in helping us develop the leadership class that's gaining a reputation regionally and nationally. But once again, 1,600 officers, we need to make sure they're all doing the right thing for the right reasons every day.
And is there a kind of sensitivity training? I mean, some of what I hear when Brian calls in, Christine calls in, is, you know, they feel violated. Their living space was invaded, and no one took that seriously, particularly the people who are entrusted with keeping them safe. Most people, if they're reasonable, are going to say, okay, I understand if there's a homicide or a violent crime against a person somewhere here, yes, that takes priority over the fact that my television got stolen. But as you kind of alluded to, it helps if that gets explained to you as the reason that you know they have to take off. How much of explaining what is going on in all of this are police officers trained to do?
We train very well in tactics nationally in how to handle things, but sometimes we don't do so much training in the public service type areas. We're just dealing with customers. Basically. So we'll review all that. And after hearing the few comments, I think we've had three now on the same. Obviously,
got another one from a Facebook message.
Obviously, we need to address that, and I will address that in command staff and see what type of training. I'll give you an example of type of training that, that helped. In the police department I used to work, we had complaints of people getting stopped, and motorists were complaining about the rudeness of the officers. Well, the officers were doing exactly what they were trained. They were tactically very, very secure in what they did. They were doing everything by the book, but the way they interacted with the citizen felt threatened. We reintroduced some training that was tactically sound, but the verbiage and the conversation with the citizen was more the focus of this training. At the end of the day, we got very tactically sound traffic stops, which are very dangerous for officers, and we had the amount of citizens complaining that was reduced greatly because of that training. We were able to be tactically sound and meet the needs of the citizens, and that's what I know Chief Height has a heart to do and wants to do.
We are talking about public safety here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Hans, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just had a question about the subject of graffiti, about making a distinction between what is, you know, gang graffiti and what is actually more like artistic graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to a lot of cities around the country, and it seems to me that the best way to go about it is to sort of foster more of an artistic community and encourage legitimate places where people can do street art and things like that. And I was just wondering if you've done anything along those lines.
Thanks very much for the call, Hans.
No, the graffiti specialist that I use by the name of Deanna McQueen taught me a great deal about graffiti. And if the art community wanted to do something like that in the city, certainly it can. However, some of the experience with that is that it did not work as well as they anticipated if they had free spaces in the city, because once someone put some type of mural up, it could be obscene and have to come down, paint over, or someone would put their work up and then someone would come in and put work up over top of it, and it would cause some type of resentment and arguments that occur. At the end of the day, we have to realize that graffiti in this community, outside of a public space that's been set aside or the art community monitoring that and have that graffiti, no matter how beautiful someone may think it is or how ingenious they may think it is, if it's on someone else's property, it is a crime. It needs to be treated as such.
Paul, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's your question, Paul?
Yeah, I was curious what the future tactics are for the obvious incline of crime in Broderville.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Paul.
Well, crime usually increases in Broad Ripple once it gets warmer, and that's one of the areas that they're focused on for 2013. I think there's been some good crime reductions in certain areas in Broad Ripple. The commander and the staff has done a good job identifying that, and more needs to be done, even to the point working with some of the business owners, working with them on what we call crime prevention through environmental design, SEPTED, working on those issues. So, you know, Broad Ripple is certainly on the radar screen for that, and you'll see some changes for this year in 2013, and some additional officers on the street will help that as well. And let me say this, I know a lot of, and I will take all the concerns that people mm-hmm. have said, and I will take those seriously, and we will look into them, and I can promise you, you have my word, that we will have a conversation about interacting with the public. We've had a handful here, but, you know, something I think needs to be pointed out is that just in the last couple of weeks, I can't tell you the amount of emails that I've read about officers that have done exceptional work, officers that have saved lives, officers that have been involved in a shooting because they stopped the vehicle with four felons in it. So there's a part of me that wants to also say we need to do a better job celebrating, sharing with the public the good work that our first responders do every day.
Is that a little frustrating for you that often the only time you make it into the news is when something goes wrong?
Well, part of that's our fault too, because we don't celebrate it as much, and we've been doing that more often internally through some programs and initiatives that we have internally. But at the end of the day, we are held in public safety to a higher standard, and quite frankly, we should be, and we should live up to those standards.
Yancey, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I just wanted to say I've lived in Indy since 2000, and I think that the IMPD does a fantastic job. I've had the both the pleasure and the displeasure of being involved with IMPD, both as, you know, maybe a speeder on a highway locally, mm-hmm. or a victim of a crime or witness to a crime, and just always, you know, an exceptional group of professional men and women.
Great.
Taking care of what I think is a great city. I've lived in other places, and Indianapolis does it well. There's room for improvement. There's always challenges, but really a fantastic organization.
Great. Thank you very much.
That's
for
all
the
I
call.
Wanted to offer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That probably feels good to hear.
It does, and I'll tell you, he said something that that I just have to jump on the bandwagon is Indy is a great city.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I grew up and born and raised, worked in Louisville, moved to South Texas, was very happy in South Texas. Family was doing well. I was the assistant city manager in mm-hmm. charge of even more departments than I have here. Had a great potential future there, and it actually turned out a couple opportunities in Louisville to return back to my home city. But when I saw Indianapolis position come open, I thought long and hard about it, prayed about it, talked to my wife, and we both decided after visiting here numerous times. I remember when we were like 24, 25, we said, wouldn't Indy be a great place to live someday? Had no idea to have that opportunity, and after much thought and prayer, we decided, you know, I'm going to put in for the job. The reason being is Indy is a special place, and this is where we want to raise our children. So we've bought a home, and I'm hopeful that Mayor Ballard and the citizens will let me remain the public safety director for quite some time.
Do you plan to be here then? For the long
I do. I mean, this is a city. This is a place that I would like to call home, but more importantly, this is a place my wife would like to call home.
And that can be a deciding factor. In the very brief time we've got left, I want to ask, what constitutes success when, however long it is, whether it's 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, when you're wrapping up your tenure as public safety director, what will we see that you will say, yes, I did well in that job, I was successful?
I think if people have a greater understanding of public safety, they have a greater understanding of their role in public safety, and at the end of my tenure, they say that we may not have agreed with him all the time, but we know he did it for the right reasons, and he exhibited integrity. If I can get that done, then I'll feel like I've been a tremendous success.
Well, I think that's a good last word. I'd like to thank you very much for coming in here and talking with us. I hope we can persuade you to come back sometime.
All you have to do is give me a phone call. I love being on the program and listening, so thank you. It's been remarkable to sit here and listen to the public and interact.
Well, thank you very much, and I'd like to thank all of our listeners, particularly those who were able to participate in the conversation. I hope you will come back on Thursday when we will be talking, doing a wrap-up, really, of the Indiana General Assembly's legislative session for 2013 with a couple of my colleagues from the State House Press Corps. I am John Krall. We have been talking about public safety here on No Limits. We'll see you on Thursday. Thank you for joining us.